Why are you so interested in a bundle of rags?
What do you make of them?
Old clothes of the gardener's.
If you say so. Dr. Durand.
What is it?
There is foam on the lips. You observed it?
I didn't notice it, I must admit.
But you observe it now?
Oh, certainly.
It is a very strange wound. It has not bled. Now, what do you think, Doctor? And the dagger is slightly discolored, that is all.
I agree, it is most abnormal.
It is not abnormal at all. It is perfectly simple. The man was stabbed after he was dead. You noticed, of course, Monsieur Giraud.
Certainly, I noticed.
But how was he killed, Poirot?
He was not killed. He died. He died, if I am not much mistaken, of an epileptic fit.
Poirot was the hero of the hour. But he was terribly concerned that his moustaches had grown limp in the heat of the railway journey, and we returned to the hotel.
Ah, and just look at my tie. It is a disgrace. Could you pass me the pomade?
Here you are. Why did you go to Paris?
To find this newspaper cutting. You recognize the photograph?
Madame Dobroy.
No, no. Not quite correct, my friend. She did not call herself by that name in those days. That is the notorious Madame Beroldi.
Madame Beroldi?
Do you remember the name?
Wasn't she the one who was accused of murdering her husband?
Just so.
She was found in her bedroom, bound hand and foot, with her husband dead beside her. And there was some story about masked Russians, but... Yes, that's just like...
No. Do not agitate me. The moustaches are at a critical point.
And there were two other men in the case. A lawyer called Georges Conneau, who was supposed to have been her lover, and a rich American called...
Hiram P. Trapp.
And she was supposed to have got Conneau to murder her husband so that she would be free to marry the millionaire. And when Conneau found that he had been used by her, he wrote to the prosecutor making a public confession. He was never found, and she, somehow or other, was acquitted.
She swore that she had nothing to do with the planning of the crime. That Conneau had killed her husband out of love for her, and that the first she knew of it was when she saw Conneau standing over her with the blood-stained knife in his hand.
But didn't they prove she could easily have got out of her bonds?
They did. But she was a very beautiful woman, and her address to the jury was a masterpiece. She had a small child, I remember. A little girl.
Whatever became of her?
She left to begin a new life in Paris. And nothing more was heard of her.
I see everything now.
What exactly do you see?
But that it was Madame de Broglie who murdered Renault.
Why?
What?
Why should she murder Renault?
Well, because...
You see, we can find no shadow of a motive. She does not benefit by his death. Considered as a mistress or as a blackmailer, she stands to lose. You can't have murder without a motive. And there is something that you are forgetting.
And what's that?
It was not Madame Dubreuil who told us this tale of being tied up by masked men. It was Madame Renault. And so, we draw nearer to the truth, which is, as always, very curious and interesting.
What else have you found out?
I have discovered what Monsieur Renault sent for me to discover.
And you know the murderer?
I know one murderer.
What do you mean?
That we have here not one crime, but two. The first I have solved. The second, I must confess I am not sure.
But I thought you said the man in the shed died a natural death.
Ta-ta-ta-ta. Still you do not understand. One may have a crime without a murderer, but for two crimes, it is essential to have two bodies. Enter! Monsieur Jacques, please come in. You got my little note?
Yes, I did.
I'm sorry to oblige you to come out here, but you will perhaps understand the atmosphere of the villa is not very congenial to me. Monsieur Giraud and I do not see eye to eye.
I can't bear the sight of him. He's an arrogant idiot.
Then may I ask a little favor of you?
Well, certainly.
Would you be so kind as to go to the railway station and take a train to the next station along the line, Abalac? Ask at the cloakroom where the two foreigners left a case there on the night of the murder. Will you do that?
Certainly I will.
There is a train in a quarter of an hour, and I must ask you not to return to the villa, as I have no wish for Giraud to get an inkling of your errand.
I'll go straight to the station.
Yeah, just a moment. There is one other thing. Why did you not tell Monsieur Otte that you were in Merlinville on the night of the murder?
Because I was not in Merlinville. I was in Cherbourg.
But the staff at the railway station say you arrived by the 11:40 train.
Do they? Are you accusing me of murdering my father?
I should like an explanation.
I came to see my fiancée, Mademoiselle Debray. I was about to go away for a long time. I did not want the whole world to know about us.
And did you see her?
Yes.
And afterwards?
I found I'd missed the last train. I walked to Beauvais and got a car to take me to Cherbourg.
A long walk at that hour of night. Well, thank you, Monsieur Jacques. And now, if you would be so kind as to carry out my little errand.
Of course. Au revoir, Monsieur Poirot. Mm-hmm.
What was all that about? Why are you sending him off to Abelac?
Oh, come, Hastings. Surely it is obvious.
Oh, you want to get him out of the way?
Ah, your penetration is amazing. Now, let us go up to the Villa Genevieve.
But we did not go straight there. Instead, Poirot decided that we should hang about outside the Villa Marguerite, hoping that Mademoiselle Marthe might come into the garden. And, eventually, she appeared.
Psst. Mademoiselle, a little word with you.
What is it, Monsieur Poirot?
You remember asking me if anyone were suspected of the crime?
Yes, monsieur. You said they were looking for two Chileans.
If you were to ask me that question again now, I should give you a different answer.
Who then?
Jacques Renaud.
But that's impossible.
You know, of course, that he was here on the night of the murder.
Yes, he told me.
It was unwise of him to have tried to conceal the fact.
Yes, but we cannot waste our time on regrets. He is innocent and we must save him.
Mademoiselle, is there something that you are keeping back that you could tell us?
Yes, there is something, but I hardly know whether you will believe it.
At any rate, tell us.
On the morning of the day Monsieur Renaud was killed, I was walking here in the garden when I heard a sound of men's voices quarrelling in the garden of the Villa Genevieve. I pushed aside the bushes and looked through. One of the men was Monsieur Renaud, and the other man was a tramp, a dreadful creature in filthy rags. He was asking for money. At that moment, Maman called from the house, and I had to go. When the second corpse was found, Monsieur Giraud insisted I looked at it. I am almost sure that the tramp and that dead man are the same.
But why did you not say so at the time?
The body was dressed in gentleman's clothes. It was only afterwards Mark, that I...
where are you?
Forgive me, I must go.
Well, let us go back to the Villa Hastings.
Is she just trying to divert suspicion from her lover?
It is a curious tale, but I believe it to be the truth. And she inadvertently gave us the truth on another point. She did not say that Jacques Renaud had been with her on the night of the crime. She simply said, he told me. If he did not see her, then who did he see?
The Villa Genevieve seemed deserted. Poirot led me swiftly to Jacques Renault's room and very methodically started to search through the cupboards and the desk.
What is it? A car's just driven up. It's Giraud with Jacques Renaud and two gendarmes.
Oh, that stupid animal could not wait. I shall not be able to replace the things in this drawer with the proper method. But I have found what I wanted. Come.
What is happening? Where are you taking my son?
He is under arrest for the murder of his father.
What? It's not true. It can't be true.
Before anyone could get to her, she fell heavily down the stairs. Poirot was instantly at her side.
She has cut her head badly, and I fancy there is slight concussion here.
But she must make a statement.
Then you will have to wait. She will probably be unconscious for at least a week.
A doctor was sent for, and we left Madame Renaud in the capable hands of Françoise. Giraud went off with his captive. Poirot decided he wanted sea air.
We will sit on this little mound and review the case.
Do you believe Jack is guilty?
There is just a chance of it. But Giraud, of course, has got it wrong. The gravest charge against Jacques Renaud is known only to me.
What is that?
Now, if you would use your little grey cells and see the whole case as clearly as I do, you too would perceive it. Think, my friend. Arrange your ideas. Be methodical.
There is one thing.
Well?
There's someone we've forgotten.
And who is that?
Georges Connor.
Excellent. Carry on.
Well, he disappeared 20 years ago, but we've no reason to suppose he's dead.
Proceed.
Therefore, we will assume that he is alive.
Perhaps.
Or that he was alive until recently.
Better.
Let us presume that he's fallen on evil times. He's become a tramp. And quite by chance, he comes to Merlinville. And there he finds the woman he never ceased to love.
Ah, always the romantic.
No. Let me go on. He finds that she has a new lover, Monsieur Renaud. He lies in wait for him as he comes to meet his mistress and stabs him in the back. There's a terrible scene with Madame de Broglie, and he suddenly falls down in an epileptic fit. Jacques Renaud suddenly appears...
No. This is a tale for the cinema. It bears no sort of resemblance to everyday life.
Well, I admit I haven't got into all the details,
On the contrary, you have ignored every one of them. Now, let us start from the basic fact of Georges Renaud. It is possible that he contrived Madame Beroldi's story about being tied up by Russians all those years ago. Mm-hmm. It is equally possible that he contrived the tying up of Madame Renaud. He is the most likely person to be behind the affair. Now, let us go through the case chronologically. You have a notebook and pencil?
Yeah.
Good. 23rd of May. Monsieur Renaud quarrels with his son over the latter's wish to marry Martha Dobray. Son leaves for Paris. 24th of May. Monsieur Renaud alters his will, leaving entire control of his fortune in his wife's hands. 7th of June. Quarrel with tramp in garden. Letter written to Hercule Poirot imploring assistance. Telegram sent to Jacques Renaud telling him to proceed to Buenos Aires. Chauffeur sent on holiday. Visit of a lady that evening. But who was she?
The woman called Bella Duvine, his mistress.
And how do we know that?
By the letter found in his overcoat.
But what makes you think that letter was written to him?
Well, it was in the overcoat. Are you suggesting it was planted?
I am suggesting it was not his overcoat. You remember that on examining the dead man's overcoat, I suggested that it was overlong? I also measured the overcoat of Jacques Renaud. It was short. So, when he flung out of the house for Paris after the row with his father, he took the wrong overcoat.
So, the letter was written to Jacques Renaud.
Exactly. So, now we know why Bella Duvine came to the villa that night, though whether she hoped to see Jacques also, we do not know. She told Monsieur Renaud she had a claim on Jacques and showed him letters Jacques had written to her. The older man tried to buy her off by writing a check, which she tore up. In the end, he got rid of her, and you remember the words overheard by the maid Leonie?
Yes, but for God's sake, go now.
He was desperately anxious to get her out of the way. Time was slipping by, and for some reason, time was precious.
Why should it be?
That is what we must ask ourselves. Time was important. Do not forget the incident of the wristwatch.
You always keep coming back to that. I don't see where all this is leading us. Why can't you simply tell me who killed Monsieur Renaud?
That is just what I am not sure of.
That's typical. You ridicule all my ideas, but when it comes down to...
Patience, my friend. Remember, it is two crimes we are investigating, for which, as I have pointed out, we have the necessary two bodies. Now, let me ask a question. Whom do we believe to have planned the crime?
You've just told me. Georges Connor.
And we know the crime to be a fake. And that Madame Renaud is lying to protect someone. Perhaps her son, perhaps the man she loves. But if Connor planned the crime and she did it for the man she loved, then she loves Georges Connor.
If you look at it like that...
Who then is Georges Connor?
The tramp.
Have we any evidence to show that she loved a tramp?
No.
Now, ask yourself, whom Madame Renaud did love. Whom did she love so dearly that when she saw his dead body she fell down in a faint?
Her husband?
Her husband. Or Georges Conneau. Whichever you like to call him.
Oh, but that's impossible.
How impossible?
Because it would mean that Renaud planned his own murder.
Well, mon ami, that is exactly what he did do.
But how could any man in his right mind...
There is one detail that perhaps escapes you. He did not intend to die. It is almost simple, really. Georges Conneau flies from Chastis to Canada. There, under an assumed name, he marries and goes to South America where he acquires a large fortune. 20 years elapse, and he deems it safe to return to Europe. And ill fortune, or obscure justice, if you wish, takes him to Merlinville, and to the one person in the whole of France who is capable of recognizing him, Madame Daubreuil. And she bleeds him heavily. Then the inevitable happens. Jacques Renaud falls in love with Martha Daubreuil and determines to marry her. The life that Conneau has rebuilt as Renaud is about to collapse like a house of cards. There is only one way of escape. Death. He must appear to die, in reality escaping to a foreign country where he will start again under yet another assumed name and where Madame Renaud would eventually join him.
But where were they going to get the body from?
Oh, who knows? Chance played into their hands. A violent and abusive tramp finds his way into the garden. There is a struggle, and the tramp falls down in a fit and dies.
But he didn't look in the least like Georges Conneau.
Exactly. So the identification must rest solely on Madame Renaud's evidence. The chauffeur and Jacques Renaud are both got out of the way, and having heard of me as a rather obscure elderly detective, he wrote his appeal for help, knowing that when I arrived, the production of the letter would have a profound effect.
So, they dressed the body in a suit of Renault's clothes, and Renault, or Conneau, or whatever you call him, was going to shuffle off on the last train dressed in the tramp's clothes. So he binds and gags Madame Renaud, and then slips out in his overcoat to bury the body on the golf course where it will easily be found.
Excellent. Just so.
Then what happened?
Then the justice that he had so long eluded overtakes him. An unknown hand stabs him in the back. Now, Hastings, you understand what I mean when I talk of two crimes.
What about the piece of lead piping?
Ha! Bravo! You remember it. To disfigure the victim's face so that it would be unrecognizable.
And the dagger? There must have been two daggers then.
Yes. They stabbed the tramp with one dagger to give credence to Madame Renaud's tale. The second killed Conneau himself. Jacques must have had two daggers made.
So, what now?
Now we must start all over again. What time is the afternoon boat from Calais?
About 5, I believe.
That will do very well. We shall just have time.
Why are we going back to England?
To find a possible witness.
Who?
Miss Bella Duvine. I think I shall be able to find her. Particularly with the help of this photograph.
He had found it in Jack Renault's desk. With love from Bella was scrawled across the corner, but it wasn't that that made my blood run cold. The likeness was not first rate, but for all that, it was unmistakable to me. It was the face of Cinderella. The Dulcie Bella Kids. That was the name she and her sister were known by. And Poirot tracked them down to a nasty little theatre in Coventry. There she was. There they both were. One flaxen-haired, one dark, matching as to size, with short, fluffy skirts and big bows in their hair. They danced and did quite tricky acrobatic feats.
Charming, don't you agree?
I don't think I can sit through the rest of the bill. I need a breath of fresh air. I'll see you back at the hotel.
I'll go by all means, mon ami. I shall stay to the end.
It was only a few steps from the theatre to our hotel. I took a large whiskey and soda up to the sitting room and sat staring into the dwindling fire. Suddenly, I was aware of someone standing behind me.
I saw you in front, When you got up to go, I slipped on a cloak and came after you. What are you doing here? Was the man with you the detective?
Yes.
Is he looking for me?
Oh, don't cry. Please don't cry. You're safe with me. I'll take care of you. Look, I know everything.
Oh, no, but you don't.
I think I do. Why did you take the dagger?
I was afraid there might be fingerprints on it. Are you going to give me up to the police?
Of course I'm not.
Why not?
Because I love you.
You can't. Not if you know. What do you know, then?
I know that you came to see Renault that night. He offered you a cheque and you tore it up. And then you left the house.
Go on. What then?
I don't know whether you knew Jack Renault would be coming that night, but you waited. Just before 12, you saw a figure on the golf links and you recognised the overcoat as Jack's.
Go on.
You had threatened to kill him in your letter, and now you knew about Mart. You plunged the dagger into him. I don't believe for a moment that you meant to kill him.
You're right. I can see it all as you tell it. And you say you love me, knowing what you do. How can you love me?
I don't know. I think love is like that, a thing one cannot help. I don't ask for anything in return. Love him still if you want to, but let me help you. That's all I ask.
You think that I love Jack? Not as I love you. Never as I love you.
Oh, Cinderella.
What a pretty picture.
Poirot!
Help me!
Quick, I'll hold him.
Hastings, is this not a little high-handed?
Get out of here, Cinderella, as fast as you can.
Oh, mon ami, you do this sort of thing very well. The strong man holds me in his iron grasp, and I am helpless as a child. But all this is uncomfortable and slightly ridiculous. Let us sit down and be calm.
You won't go after her.
Am I, Giro? Let me go. Without doubt, I shall be able to find her when the time comes.
I suppose I haven't got the right any more to ask what happens next.
On the contrary. We are going back to France without delay.
Oui.
Of course. You know very well you can't afford to let Papa Poirot out of your sight.
We crossed the channel by the morning boat and went straight back to the Hôtel des Bains. A letter had been left for Poirot at the reception desk.
Dear Monsieur Poirot, if you get this, I beg of you to come to my aid. I have no one to turn to. And at all costs, Jack must be saved. I implore you on my knees to help us. Marthe d'Aubray.
You'll go?
At once.
I was in despair. I had no idea what to do. They won't even let me visit Jacques in prison. I'm going mad. Is it true what they say, that he doesn't deny the crime?
I fear so, mademoiselle.
But it's impossible. He couldn't have done it. I don't believe it.
No, neither do I believe it, mademoiselle.
But then why doesn't he speak? I don't understand.
Perhaps because he is screening someone.
Screening someone? Do you mean his mother? I suspected her from the very beginning. Who inherits all that vast fortune? She does. It is easy to wear widow's weeds and play the hypocrite.
Mademoiselle, if we are to work together, we must have things clear. First, I will ask you a question.
Yes, monsieur?
Are you aware of your mother's real name? Ah, there. No, no, no. Calm yourself, Petite. I see that you do know. Now, a second question. Did you know who Monsieur Renault really was?
Monsieur Renault?
Ah, I see you do not know that. Then I shall explain a few of the facts to you, but I must be brief. We have to go to Saint-Omer to be present when Jacques is brought before the court.
Please save him, monsieur. I love him so. Save him. Save him.
Renault, do you deny that you were in Merlinville on the night of the crime?
I have told you that I was in Cherbourg.
He was a changed man. His cheeks had fallen in and there were deep black circles round his eyes. He made no attempt to defend himself. It was obvious to me that his only concern was to conceal anything that might incriminate Bella.
I have no alternative but to commit you for trial.
Monsieur Otey, I swear that I did not kill my father.
Oh,
Monsieur le juge! Monsieur le juge!
How dare you disturb the sitting of the court?
There is a lady here who says...
Who says what? This is highly irregular. Get out!
But a slender figure, dressed all in black, her face hidden by a long veil, had made her way into the courtroom.
You are the juge d'instruction, Monsieur Auté.
She raised her veil, and I was seized with fear. But though as like her as two peas, this was not Cinderella. It was the face I had seen in the photograph Poirot had found in Jack Renault's room.
My name is Bella Duveen. I wish to give myself up for the murder of Monsieur Renault.
There is a letter for you, mon ami. I suspect it is from your little acrobat.
My friend, you will know all by the time you get this. Nothing that I can say will move Bella. She has gone to give herself up. You will know now that
I deceived you, and that where you gave me trust, I repaid you with lies. But once I knew that you thought I was Bella, and that you intended to save me, I knew I had to use you to help me save her. So I went on lying. But as soon as Bella read in the paper that Jack had been arrested, it was all up. I'm very tired. I can't write any more.
Dulcie Duveen. And you mean to say you knew all along?
Yes, my friend.
Why didn't you tell me?
To begin with, I could hardly believe it conceivable that you could make such a mistake. The sisters are very alike, but by no means incapable of distinguishment.
Why didn't you tell me that night in the hotel in Coventry?
You were rather high-handed in your methods. You did not give me a chance. And I was a little hurt at your want of faith in me.
But where am I to find her? There's no address on the letter. There's a French stamp, that's all.
No. Do not excite yourself. Leave it to Papa Poirot. I will find her for you as soon as I have a few minutes. Ah, Monsieur Jacques. My heartiest congratulations.
I had to come and see you. What's going to happen to Bella? I went through all that to protect her, and now it's all no use.
If I were you, I should not distress myself unduly. The French courts are very lenient to youth and beauty and the crime passionnel.
I've treated her shamefully. I should have told her the truth after I met Marthe, but I was too much of a coward.
Could you tell us exactly what did happen on that terrible evening?
Well, as I told you, I came from Cherbourg to see Marthe. The train was late, and I decided to take a shortcut across the links. Then I heard a strange cry. It wasn't loud, a sort of choke and gasp. I came round the corner of a bush. In the moonlight, I saw a figure lying face downwards with a dagger sticking in his back. Then I looked up and saw her. She was looking at me as though she saw a ghost. All expression seemed frozen out of her face by horror. And she turned and ran.
And afterwards?
I thought I'd better get away as fast as I could. I went back to Cherbourg.
Thank you. There is something you should know. Your mother has regained consciousness. I am about to go to the Villa Geneviève. Will you come with us?
I will come, but I would like to ask a favour of you.
Whatever you wish.
How would it be if you went on first to break the news to Mother that I'm free?
While you break it in person to Mademoiselle Marthe. Of course, by all means. But let us be off.
When we got to the villa, Poirot insisted on going up to see Madame Renault alone, while I paced about the salon. It was some time before he reappeared, looking unusually grave.
I would hardly have credited it, but women are very unpredictable.
What has happened?
I fear we are in for serious trouble. Madame Renault...
Here are Jack and Marthe.
We came as quickly as we could.
It is better. You should not go up. Your mother is very upset.
But I must
see her. No, Monsieur Jacques.
But Jacques and I...
In any case, do not take Mademoiselle with you. And if you do insist on going up...
I thank you for your good offices, Monsieur Poirot. But I will make my own wishes clear.
Mother.
I am no mother of yours. You are no son of mine. From this day and hour, I renounce you.
But Mother, what have I done?
Your father's blood is on your head. You thwarted and defied him over this girl. And by your heartless treatment of another girl, you brought about his death. Tomorrow, I intend to take such steps as shall make it certain. You shall never touch a penny of his money. Make your way in the world as best you can with the help of a girl who is the daughter of your father's bitterest enemy.
Slowly and painfully, she went back up the stairs. Jack Renault swayed and nearly fell.
The events of the last few days have proved too much for him. Now, where can we take him?
To the Villa Marguerite. We will look after him, Maman and I.
A doctor was sent for, who prescribed perfect rest and quiet, and advised someone to sit up with Jack. But I knew that Marta would do that anyway. Poirot and I went back to the Hotel des Bains.
Has an English lady, a Miss Robinson, arrived?
Yes, monsieur. She's in the little salon.
Good. Come along, Hastings.
But who on earth is Miss Robinson?
Oh, go on, mon ami. Do you think I wish to trumpet abroad in Merlinville the name of Duvine?
Cinderella.
Thank you, Monsieur Poirot.
Now, mes enfants, for the moment we have no time for sentiment. There is work ahead of us. Mademoiselle, were you able to do what I asked you?
Here it is.
But that's the dagger that... I thought you said you threw it in the sea.
Très bien. I am very pleased with you. Now, go now and rest yourself, mademoiselle. Hastings and I have work to do. You shall see him tomorrow.
Oh, no. Wherever you're going, I'm coming too.
No, but mademoiselle...
Coming too, and that is that.
Oh, very well, but it will not be amusing. In all probability, nothing will happen.
It was quite dark now, and there was a cool breeze. Poirot set off in the direction of the Villa Genevieve. But when we were passing the Villa Marguerite...
I should like to assure myself that all is well with Jacques Renault. Come in with me, Hastings. It would be best if Mademoiselle perhaps remained outside. Madame Dobreuil might say something which would wound her.
Do you see the shadow on the blind up there? Mm-hmm. That's Marta Dobreuil, surely.
Then that is where we shall find Jacques Renault.
He is still very feverish, but he is sleeping. That is the great thing. Maman made him a tisane.
Is the doctor coming back?
Not unless we send for him.
We will come again in the morning.
Permit me to show you out, monsieur.
I hope we have not troubled you, madame.
Not at all, monsieur. This is a trying time for us all.
At least Monsieur Jacques is in safe hands now.
She will sit by his side all night with her embroidery. She wants nothing more than to be with him.
If you should need us at any time, do not hesitate to telephone us. We shall be at the Hôtel des Bains. Good night, madame.
That didn't take you very long.
I simply needed to see that all was well. You see the shadow? She is still at her post.
Where now?
To the Villa Genevieve.
The villa was in total darkness. Poirot took up a position behind some bushes in the drive where we had a good view of the house. We were almost immediately underneath the window of Madame Renault's bedroom. The window was open.
I do not expect anything to happen for at least an hour.
So what are we supposed to do?
Watch Madame Renault's room. It may be as long as 2 hours. Oh my God! My God, where is she? That didn't come from her room.
A light's come on the other side of the house. There are two people fighting.
Mi tonnerre. Françoise must have changed her room. Now, quickly, up the tree and through the window.
But take care, Dulcie.
Take care, nothing. This is child's play to me.
Oh, dear, the door of the room is locked and bolted. It will take too long to burst it open. Where is Françoise?
Let me try.
No, it is useless. Françoise! Françoise!
You're wasting your energy. I'm the only one who can do anything.
Huh? Where are you going?
I'm going to climb round to the window by the outside.
Be careful, you'll be killed.
No. You forget she is a professional acrobat. Let us pray she is in time.
Monsieur Poirot, what's going on?
Why didn't you tell me she changed her room? Where is your mistress?
In the room, down the passage. This way. But you can't get in. The door's locked and bolted on the inside.
It's all over.
What? She's safe?
I got here just in time.
God, you came. I was nearly strangled.
Where is it?
Over there.
Dead?
I think so. That marble fender's got a very sharp edge, and it was a very heavy fall. I'm sorry.
Sorry? But for you, I would have been killed.
But who is it?
The murderer of Monsieur Renault and the would-be murderer of Madame Renault.
The figure was wrapped in a fold of some dark material. I knelt down and lifted it up and looked into the dead, beautiful face of Marthe de Broglie.
No, my friend, it was not a dream.
I simply don't understand. Surely it was Bella Duveen who killed Renault.
She said she did, but that was simply to save the man she loved from the guillotine.
But didn't Jack Renault say that he...
He said they both arrived at the scene at the same moment. Each took the other to be the perpetrator of the crime, but neither of them was the murderer. It was a cold-blooded, premeditated crime which could only have been committed by someone who knew what the Renaults themselves intended to do. And then I remembered what Marthe de Broglie had told us about seeing the quarrel with the tramp. What if she had seen the tramp's death and not been called away by her mother, as she said? And what if she had heard the conversation between the Renaults which followed?
What possible motive could she have had for killing Renault?
Money. Renault was a millionaire several times over, and at his death, half of that vast fortune would pass to his son. Or that is what Jack believed, and what Marthe counted on. But Renault stood inexorably in the way of her marriage with Jack. She knew that he was planning to contrive his own death. She had only to step in at the right moment and turn the farce into grim reality.
But what about the daggers? What about the one that Dulcie stole?
Jacques had three daggers made. One he gave to his mother, the second to Bella, and the third to Marthe de Broglie. Oh. That was why I asked your little friend to search among her sister's effects. Bella's dagger was safe at home. It was Marthe's dagger that killed Renault, and Madame Renault's dagger that was stuck into the body of the tramp.
And then Marthe realized that she had to kill Madame Renault to prevent her cutting Jack out of her will.
That was a little contrivance of my own. I persuaded Madame Renault to play that little scene in front of the young couple so that Marthe would be forced out into the open.
Oh. What absolutely bewilders me is how she managed to get to the Villa Genevieve before we did.
Oh, that is quite simple. She slipped out of the Villa Marguerite by the back way while we were talking to her mother in the hall.
But the shadow on the blind. We saw it from the road.
My friend, what an imbecile I was. It was the shadow of her mother. One is old, one is young, but the profiles are exactly alike. But for your little acrobat with her wrists of steel, we would certainly have been too late, and Marthe de Broglie would have escaped through the window.
When did you first begin to suspect her? When she told us she had overheard the quarrel in the garden?
My friend, do you remember when we drove into Merlinville that first day? Mm-hmm. You asked me if I had noticed a young goddess standing at the gate, and I replied that I had seen only a girl with anxious eyes. That is how I have thought of Marthe de Broglie from the beginning. The girl with the anxious eyes. Why was she anxious? Not on Jacques Renault's behalf, for she did not know then that he had been in Merlinville the previous evening.
By the way, how is Jacques Renault?
Not much better. But he still knows nothing. He's still at the Villa Marguerite. But Madame de Broglie has disappeared. The police are looking for her.
Was she in with her daughter, do you think?
We shall never know. Madame is a lady who can keep her secrets. And I doubt very much if the police will ever find her.
What is your friend Giraud going to say of all this?
He knows already. He has a crisis of the nerves. He has been obliged to return to Paris.
A few days later, Jack Renault came to see us, with a resolute expression on his face.
Monsieur Poirot, I've come to say goodbye. I'm sailing for South America almost immediately. I mean to start a new life out there.
You go alone, Monsieur Jacques?
My mother goes with me. I shall try.
No one else?
What do you mean?
A girl who loves you very dearly, who has been willing to lay down her life for you?
Bella, how could I ask her? After all that's happened, could I go to her?
Women have an infinite capacity for understanding.
Yes, but I've been such a damned fool.
You have a new and wonderful life before you. Ask her to share it with you. You may not realize it, but your love for each other has been tested in the fire and not found wanting. You have both been willing to lay down your lives for each other.
And what, you may ask, became of Captain Arthur Hastings and his little acrobat?
I never knew your name was Arthur.
It's a closely guarded secret. But what am I to call you? It can't be Bella, since it isn't your name, and Dulcie seems so unfamiliar.
Then you'll have to go on calling me Cinderella.
And you all know how the best fairy tales come to an end.
In Agatha Christie's Murder on the Lynx, Hercule Poirot was played by John Moffat, Captain Arthur Hastings by Jeremy Clyde, and Dulcie Devine by Madeline Smith. Madame Renault, Joan Matheson. Jack Renault, Stephen Tompkinson. Madame Debray, Petra Davis. Marc Debray, Francesca Buller. Judge Otte, David King. Inspector Bex, Geoffrey Whitehead. Inspector Giraud, Vincent Brimble. Sergeant of Police, Ken Cumberledge. The elderly servant Francoise was Barbara Atkinson. The young servant Leonie, Joanna Mackey. The hotel receptionist, Danny Schiller. The doctor, Brian Miller. Other parts were played by members of the cast. Murder on the Lynx was dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell and directed by Enid Williams.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.